following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action, a lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Off with a new year of Inside Eagle Nation. Happy 2021, Eagle Nation. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed. It was an event-filled weekend for Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball, starting up Sunbelt Conference play. We will dive into that in just a moment. But how did you ring in the new year, Danny Reed?
I actually watched more bowls this year than I think I have in a long time. I don't know, for whatever reason, I got really into a lot of the bowl matchups. I watched the Miami-Oklahoma State game from beginning to end. It was a really good game, even though Oklahoma State jumped out early. I think they hung on and won. Watched a lot of the Texas A&M-North Carolina game. That was a highly offensive game, which kind of expected with the two teams that participated. It was nice to see what other teams go through with bowls that aren't national championship games, because I think now we're trained that if you're not in the college football playoff, you don't matter, which is really unfair. But to see other bowl games and how those fan bases treat them, especially this year when you don't know if you're going to play and you're still able to get to them. I mean, we celebrated Georgia Southern playing 13 games, which they're still the only team to do so. Alabama's going to do it when they play Ohio State for the national championship. But knowing how much it's meant to Georgia Southern to go to the GoDaddy Bowl and go to New Orleans and go to Orlando and go to Montgomery, but for those other fan bases, regardless of what the attendance was, but just to see how much they had bought into it to celebrate a year that they didn't even know they were going to have.
And I think a lot of people knew that this was going to be an odd year, but I think it all comes to fruition of what we've talked about, that you can't really look at schedules, you can't look at matchups or records at any point in the season, and it all really came to what it was in the college football semifinals. And I know we don't talk about a whole lot of outside of Georgia Southern athletics on this, but the way Ohio State did against Clemson, I think Dabo had talked about it going into the week that Ohio State was number 11 on his list in the country. Well, and then Ohio State may have bounced them to number 11 the way that they happened. And everybody's talked about, it's not fair that Ohio State's in the college football playoff with only playing the number of games that they have and haven't really had matchups that they need to. They had to have the rules bent a little bit in the sense of getting into the conference championship. But at the end of the day, Ohio State handled business when nobody expected them to.
Yeah, you've got to be really careful giving certain teams ammunition.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Ask a lot of teams that come here and start talking to our fans and how that works out.
It seems all well and good. They want to be the team to slay the beast, go to Paulson, where opponents have won, I think, 17% of the time in the more than 35 years it's been up. But more often than not, when people walk in, they realize, okay, it's why hardly anybody wins here. It's why Georgia Southern had won 10 in a row and 16 of 18 before App State came in to close out the year.
But as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. A couple of football notes to get to before we dive into Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball. Tyler Bass, former Georgia Southern Eagle, we saw what he could do in blue and white. different shade of blue, and I guess it's the same shade of white, but making his way up to Buffalo in a rookie season, set the franchise record with 141 points for the Buffalo Bills this year.
And the guy's record that he broke, Steve Christie, is one of the top kickers in NFL history. He set that back in 1998, and I can remember growing up watching all those Buffalo Bills Super Bowls. They never won any of them, but it was always Steve Christie as the kicker for whenever those Jim Kelly-led offenses would score. You knew Bass was going to have a chance to score a lot of points this year, depending on how many games were going to get played, but the NFL, full regular season, all 256 games, they ended up getting them all in. Josh Allen deserves a lot of that credit for having one of the best seasons a quarterback has ever had in NFL history. But even though Bass had his hiccups towards the beginning, I think at the Jets is when he made 6 field goals. He was 6 out of 8, and ever since then, he's been one of the league's best with one of his former teammates in the NFC, which we'll talk about in just a moment. He may not get the Pro Bowl that his teammate is going to, but his Bills are going to the playoffs, and deservedly so.
I didn't realize how well the Bills were doing. 13-3 this year.
Yeah.
I don't pay attention to a whole lot of NFL, and I know I probably should, but it is what it is.
Well, they had that 56-point cherry that they just dropped on the Dolphins on Sunday, and they knocked them out of the AFC playoffs. They finished 10-6, but because of that, Miami couldn't go to the playoffs, so they missed out on the top 7.
The Bills will have the number 7-seeded Indianapolis Colts on Sunday on CBS for the AFC playoffs. A couple of other Eagles in the pros. Matt Breida with Miami finished 10-6, as you just mentioned. Played in 12 games this year with 254 yards on the year. Their season has come to a close, as we just talked about. And you mentioned the former teammate for Tyler Bass, Younghoe Koo, finished with the Atlanta Falcons at a record we're not going to mention. Played 15 games with 37 of 39 on field goals, a long of 54. He's going to the Pro Bowl, and he set a Atlanta Falcons franchise record for field goals in a season, in a year that they really needed it.
And he broke Matt Bryant's team record for field goal percentage in a single season, 97%. And I know the one kick that he missed just a week ago was one that could have won the game. And I know that's been a very difficult year for the Falcons in a lot of different respects, but it comes down to close games and blowing leads and whatever. But they have a chance to change the fate of the franchise. And now that Koo has had a season he just put up, there's no reason to think that he is not going to be part of the solution going forward.
No, I would think that Younghoe Koo is going to be seeing a pretty thick contract coming up in the near future.
He should be. And I don't know who his coach is going to be. They also have to figure who their general manager is going to be.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered up there, but we'll get with Russ on that a little bit later on.
But, look, I'm speaking about this as a non-Falcon fan. You know I'm a Washington football team fan.
Correct.
But for the Falcons, the pieces are there.
Oh, yeah. The pieces have always been there. That's never really been the problem. Well, at some point it was, but that hadn't really been the problem the last couple of years. But
Mike Smith proved he could win there.
Yes.
Dan Quinn proved he could win there.
Correct.
But it just hasn't been sustained. It's been way too splotchy with a year here, a year there. They need someone to establish something and then be consistent.
A couple of other Eagles in the pros. Jerick McKinnon finished up the season with the San Francisco 49ers, 6-10 on the year. Had 15 games played with 4 starts, 319 yards, a career-high 5 touchdowns. Also had a receiving touchdown as well as their season comes to a close. And then Kendall Vildor, the Chicago Bears at 8-8, make it into the NFC playoffs. He had 16 games played with 1 start on the year, 17 tackles. They will face the number 2 seed New Orleans Saints on Sunday, 4:40 the kickoff on CBS.
Did you see that he almost had his first career pick?
I did not.
Playing the Packers, and I cannot tell you what part of the game it was, but he made a diving play on an Aaron Rodgers throw, and he probably should have come up with it. I'm guessing he's probably here from Corey Peoples and Kevin Woodley about a play that he didn't make. But to have your first pick be off Aaron Rodgers, that would have been quite a story. But to also think that as a rookie who went into the season probably 5th on the depth chart and was looking at special teams reps to make it into the starting lineup, future's definitely bright for him.
They will be in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome down in New Orleans.
We were just there.
We were just there.
Yeah.
Got to catch up with the former and the original voice of the Eagles in Dave Nitz, now with the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs. And a story that we haven't brought up yet that you and I talked about at some point during that crazy day of you getting to the stadium on
You got to remember, I was only in New Orleans for about 5 hours that day.
Yeah. Normally it's me. This time you got the short end of the stick on this one.
Yeah, but I wouldn't cut it as close as you did.
No. That's what we talked about it before. The fact of you just getting from Fort Myers morning of, and everything worked out almost flawlessly.
It really couldn't have gone much better.
No. But you were a little bit on edge of whether you were going to get there, and understandably. But I was sitting back and saying, if we pulled off getting me from Vegas to Orlando in the span of 6 hours, yeah. I'm not worried about it.
I know we haven't talked about this yet, but that flight I took from Fort Myers to Atlanta, that was the most chill flight I've ever had in my life. It was a full-size plane. There might have been 20 people on that plane.
Nice.
Apparently not a lot of people go from Fort Myers to Atlanta on December the 23rd.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that's a hot commodity.
It was a pretty full flight going from Atlanta to New Orleans. You would expect that. But going down to get bags, as soon as I went outside of door 11, there's Terry waiting with the SUV. It was perfect.
Beautiful. But got to catch up with the voice of the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs and, again, the original voice of the Eagles in Dave Nitz. And we were talking about his time in Statesboro and how he was the voice here in the late 60s for 3 years with men's basketball. But his spotting boards, there's a lot of people, and you and I don't do this, but there's some people that take like cardboard or some kind of thicker styrofoam board sometimes and put their boards on it, and then that way they just flip it over whenever opposite teams take the field. Well, his boards were made out of a ceiling tile. Well, the ceiling tile came from the radio station here in Statesboro, and he still uses it today.
It looked like it, too.
Yeah. He said, I've had to add tape around the edges, and I think they've shrunk a little bit over the years of getting the corners knocked off. But he said these are the original boards from the ceiling tile when they were redoing the ceiling over at WWNS.
When I went in his booth to talk, and we got to visit for about 15 minutes or so right before our respective tailgate games were going, I looked at his boards on the table and thought, what is that? I couldn't tell if it was a picture frame or if it was a table that he had cut up or whatnot. But then you told me that. I wish I would have asked about it. You don't think to ask about it.
Well, I didn't really ask him where his boards were from. And it was one of those that one story led to another and then another. And it's one of those things we talked about all the time, how you can ask one question, but the best answers you're going to get are about a question you didn't ask.
Yeah. For sure.
But really great to catch up with him a couple of weeks ago. One other news note around Georgia Southern Athletics, track and field putting out their schedule on Monday. Be starting off in the next couple of weeks at the Liberty Elite Invitational. Not just the Liberty Invitational, the Liberty Elite Invitational, January 22nd and 23rd. Full schedule put up on gseagles.com on the schedule tab. You can also go and read the schedule release from the great Aaron Soka put it out on Monday, but track and field going to get going here in a couple of weeks.
Tie those shoes tight.
Get them laced up. And track shoes always worried me. Because isn't it that they only have spikes on the front part?
Yeah.
That just seems like you would be unbalanced.
But they run properly.
Well, I'm sure they do. I don't.
Well, I'm not saying that you don't run properly. But
I am.
But for those specific shoes, they know how to run in them because they wear them.
Wonder if they would make me faster. Couldn't make me any slower.
Do you need speed?
I hope not. If I need speed, we're in a bad situation.
That's what I'm saying. For what we do, speed isn't really something we talk about a whole lot.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Maybe getting in and out of breaks, but as far as getting to place.
I mean, you're talking about the guy that their high school baseball coach said that it looked like second base was running away from them. Speed is not my strong suit. But Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball started off the 2021 calendar year with the start of Sunbelt Conference play, both taking 1-1 from South Alabama. Started off with Georgia Southern women's basketball on Friday, New Year's Day. Fell to the South Alabama Jaguars down in the Mitchell Center, 71-65. It's a game that Georgia Southern led going into the fourth quarter, 51-49, but was outscored by South Alabama, 22-14. In the fourth quarter, Shondell Vickers was really good, though. 12 points, 15 rebounds, her 10th career double-double. Had 8 offensive rebounds. That's the most for a Georgia Southern Eagle in 4 years. And I don't care what you're doing. If you've got 8 offensive rebounds, you're doing something right.
That was the thing we talked about so much with Monte Glenn for the 4 years that he was here. He was an offensive rebounding dynamo. Isaiah Crawley was last year. And so far this season, Prince Toyabi and Mackenzie McFadden have both been excellent on the offensive glass. And that's for a team that's shooting close to 50%. And they're still grabbing 14 offensive rebounds per game. But for Vickers, 8 offensive boards. It didn't pay dividends initially, but the next day, able to split. And then just on Monday, she's named Sun Belt Conference Player of the Week.
Back-to-back Conference Player of the Weeks for Georgia Southern Women's Basketball. The week prior is Aitiana Galdon at the point. But back to Friday, the Post really did a good job on the preseason Player of the Year in Antoinette Lewis. She finished with just 6 points and 6 rebounds, coming in averaging a double-double to that series, but really got hurt by the South Alabama guards. Devin Lowe had a career-high 22 points, 4 of 9 from long range. And all of this without Savannah Jones for South Alabama was a preseason first-team All-Sun Belt pick. She was still out with the broken hand. They're hoping to get her back in the next couple of weeks. But Georgia Southern really struggled shooting from behind the arc, just 3 of 23 from three-point land for just 13% after missing their first 12 they took in the ball game. And we talked about it with Coach Howard after the game that no matter really what you're doing on the defensive side, when you are just shooting 13% from long range and shooting 23 of them, that's not really a recipe for success.
Could say that a lot with how the Eagle men have had to deal with their shooting woes from three-point territory. It's been okay at times. They did make 10 in their first game against South Alabama, which we'll get to in just a moment. But you have to be able to knock down shots regardless of whether or not you're seeing a man pressure defense or a spread out zone defense. That all comes from preparation. And you can still know what a defense's tendencies are, but when it gets to that moment in the game, and I've seen the Eagle men, they've been passing up a lot of jump shots because they're not making a lot of jump shots, so maybe they're a little bit gun-shy. But if you don't take opportunities when you have open looks, who's to say you're going to get more opportunities with open looks?
And you kind of hit the nail on the head. The way that Georgia Southern had to really adjust this weekend in South Alabama, the Jaguars came in, and going into the matchup, the scout said that South Alabama played 99% man-to-man. They had only been in like 15 or 16 possessions of zone defense. Well, Georgia Southern, especially on Saturday, saw the majority of zone defense. Man, and a lot of it's just kind of how Georgia Southern shot on Friday. But this is going to be the season where you have to adjust, where there's not a whole lot of things you can change from one game to the next, playing Friday, Saturday. It's going to be one that you got to keep your head on a swivel.
And most of the time, you're playing two games against the same team in less than 24 hours. But there was a change in league scheduling that I did see on Sunday. Texas State's men have moved their Friday games from 6 to 4. So they're going to be playing Friday at 4 and Saturday at 4 to give their guys as much more rest as they possibly can going into that second matchup, because they started the year at Louisiana last week and their first game went to overtime. Cajuns came back and won that game. Granted, Texas State had a 3 at the end of regulation to send it there. But you're already thinking, okay, we played 45 minutes and we got to come back 16 hours later and do this again. Somehow get fresh, somehow be ready to roll. Now, they did win that second game, but that first little instance of this Friday-Saturday deal is we don't want to have to do that again. Now, look, you may play a triple overtime game with the new time set. It's just going to be at home. That's just something you got to deal with. That you can't affect that, but you can still set up the schedule in a most advantageous way.
I'll be interested to see how the scheduling changes in the next couple of weeks, the way once you get a week or two under your belt, if you adjust some of those times. Like Georgia Southern this past weekend, women's basketball played both games at 2 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah.
And so you're playing 24 hours difference in the start times, whereas a lot of times I think across the league is kind of set where you would play 6 o'clock on Friday, 4 o'clock on Saturday, and the league has come out and said 4 o'clock is the latest that you can start the game on Saturday just to get everybody back and all of that. But I wonder if you're going to see some of those Friday games moved up to an early afternoon to get just a couple of hours more rest.
And it makes more sense because we're all dealing with COVID restrictions, so there's not going to be full attendance. You're not going to have to deal about, well, there's not going to be anybody there. Folks, it's 75% lack of capacity in just about everywhere you're going. Where Georgia Southern's headed this week in Appalachian State, there are no fans. we were at Davidson earlier this year, no fans outside of 15 administrators and some alumni and some boosters or whatever. That's what it's going to be like in the home center on Friday and Saturday this weekend up in the high country.
But Georgia Southern bounced back on the women's basketball side on Saturday, got the 78-71 victory over South Alabama in the Mitchell Center, and really had to fight in this game. Got down by 10 with 7.5 minutes left in the first quarter, but kept chipping away and finally broke through. Took their first lead midway through the third quarter, and then outscored South Alabama 20-10 in the third. Was able to close it out with six straight free throws by Aitiana Galden, who finished with 15 points. Shondell Vickers, just shy of another double-double, had 12 points, 9 rebounds, and freshman Deja Holmes really took control of the game at one point, 3 of 5 from long range, finished with 13 points. And it was a case where South Alabama just ran out of gas, and you and I have talked about it after the first weekend, where I think you're going to see that a lot this year, especially in the Sun Belt, where both on the men's and women's side, there's not a whole lot of teams that'll go more than 7 or 8 deep.
In the non-conference, there's a lot more experimenting with 11, 12, 13, 15 players. I mean, a lot of times you're playing teams you're going to throttle so you can get walk-ons in to have special moments. But you just have to wonder if teams are going to have to say, okay, we know who we have to play, but maybe we have to be a little bit more liberal about who we use. When you're playing two games stacked like this against the same team, eventually you're going to run out of plays to run. Eventually they're going to pick up on something. So for somebody that's maybe only played 2/3 of the games, 5-10 minutes a game, you may have to ask that person, okay, look, we told you preseason you need to be ready for something like this. So maybe that's an instance where someone steps in and gives you valuable minutes, makes a couple of shots, takes a charge or two, because you can affect a game just as much by doing that from a momentum standpoint as you can by knocking down a shot. It's going to be fascinating considering that this is a back-to-back. There's a lot of leagues that are going back-to-back, but some are sliding that off day in the middle still. But for the others that are going one day, next day, I saw in the Horizon League that Oakland – lost at home to Wright State by 39 points. The next day they came back and won by 7.
Good grief.
Boise State, this was a Thursday, Saturday in the Mountain West, Boise State beat San Jose State by 52. Came back Saturday, needed a tip in with 14 seconds left to beat San Jose State.
I just wonder if with these games, especially in a league like the Sun Belt where it's back-to-back Friday, Saturday, if you're going to see, if you get down by 10, 15 in the third quarter, early second half, if you're on the men's side, if you start to wave the white flag and start putting guys in that normally wouldn't see minutes just for the sheer fact to get a little bit of rest. I mean, you look at what Appalachian State women were able to do. They knocked off Troy, who came in the preseason favorite in the league by a lot. They knocked off Troy 78-66 on Friday, but then Troy comes back and did what Troy does and beat him by 20 on Saturday.
The good rule of thumb in this league for a long time has been defend home court and try to split on the road. That's, and look, that could be a lot of leagues, but especially in the Sun Belt, home court advantage has been so meaningful. If you can defend home court and then find a way to win at least 50% of your games on the road, you're probably in pretty good position by the time the tournament gets here. This year, I'm thinking that teams just want to split, period.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Look, you want to defend home court, but there's not a real home court advantage for almost everybody. At most, it's 25% fans. So at most, it's a couple hundred people in these gyms, some as big as the Cajun Dome, others as small as the third floor or Panther Fieldhouse. And you basically have to look at it as one team playing another team and not being affected by the environment, because there really isn't an environment. These are just games being played almost as if they're exhibition-style games or tournament games, because when we've gone to New Orleans, there haven't been very many crowds unless the Cages have been playing, because they're right near New Orleans.
And the difference in the environment, too, is how these gyms are set up. Everybody talks about how it was hard to play in Hanner because everybody was right on top of you. Well, now, a lot like other places, we were in the Mitchell Center, the lower bowl was pushed back, and so you're 15, 20 feet away from any kind of fans. And at that point, you're still at 25%. And so the way that the gyms are set up are changing the environment. You look at Hanner Fieldhouse, the entire bench side, those stands have been pushed back. I saw they put a couple of cardboard cutouts along the top.
Yeah.
But
yeah, the Lunsfords were watching over us this weekend.
I saw that.
It helped on Saturday, not so much on Friday.
They need to Photoshop the new bowl trophy to Chad's. Put a sticker on it. But it's going to be weird going through the rest of this season and how everything progresses in both leagues. Before we go into men's basketball games this past week, one thing I'm going to get you excited about. When you go to South Alabama in a couple of weeks, hold on to your table. When you go to South Alabama in a couple of weeks, not only are you going to get to hang out with our buddy JT Crabtree, JD Byers as well, but they have some of the best media food. They've moved their media room into like a suite or like a green room type deal, and it's catered by the house staff inside the Mitchell Center.
So we're going upstairs instead of...
No. It's still on floor level. Okay. It's just out the other side.
Okay.
But Friday, they had a Philly cheesesteak with onion rings that was out of this world. And then Saturday, they had a buffalo chicken sandwich with tater tots that were covered in cheese. And now, trust me, I know this isn't the heart-healthy version of Inside Eagle Nation, but...
Probably needed a lot of space. A little bit more space on
Even better. We're on platforms. It's just me, J.D. Byers, and Charlie was down on the other end.
Oh, Charlie.
Beautiful. We had our own space.
JT brought his wife on this trip to Statesboro. They had a chance to...
Yeah, they came down Wednesday. He texted me Wednesday and was like, hey, where do I need to go in Statesboro? I was like, you're a day early, dude.
Well, because the team had come down. They wanted to get in day early since there's no classes. They got the students out of Mobile for a little bit. He drove separately, but he injured his foot not too long ago. But he still drove up and back.
Oh, I didn't know he was... limpy?
He wasn't really hobbled, but he was definitely in a little bit of pain. He said he had some...
You don't see that on his GoPro.
He had some mobility for the first time in a while, but he told me the story about how it had happened, and he actually put a picture of his foot on Facebook.
Between him and Josh Sowers, you could pretty much make a scrapbook of everything that they do.
Makes sense, because they're besties.
Well, yeah. JT has better hair.
The voice of the Blaze.
Didn't you tell me Josh cut his hair?
He did, yes. He doesn't look so much like Shaggy anymore.
Thank goodness. We had those, during the quarantine, we had those Sunbelt broadcaster calls where all of us would just get on for an hour, some 4 or 5 hours. And every time somebody would pop on, they'd be like, whoa, what happened to your hair, Josh?
Well, it got long, and then he dyed it electric orange, like the color the Denver Broncos used to be. And
wow.
It looked like...
He looked like the Arkansas Pine Bluff logo.
And I never knew that in the logo, the Lions mane writes out UAPB.
It what?
You never noticed that?
No.
Okay, and the Lions mane of the Pine Bluff logo, the crazy hair and all that, it spells out UAPB. That's where Sean Forrest, Eagle men's assistant, played. He was the all-time leading scorer there. But yeah, the mane, the hair in the mane, it spells out UAPB.
Aaron just showed me a picture.
Yeah.
What? That's one of those things. There's like a social media trend going around. You were today years old when you found this out. Well, there's mine. Anyway, Georgia Southern women's basketball will host the Appalachian State Mountaineers inside Hander Fieldhouse Friday, 6 o'clock, 4 o'clock to tip off on Saturday. Georgia Southern men's basketball hosted the South Alabama Jaguars Friday, falling to the Jags 88-59. South Alabama, you were telling me, only had 9 active players. Yep. And only really played 6, maybe 7.
It hurt them on Saturday, but on Friday when everything was falling and – they got their bench into it, and they were more energized. If they were playing for one game, they got that game. And they played about as well as they could offensively. They made 10 threes in 19 attempts. Michael Flowers, their point guard, the grad transfer from Western Michigan. I don't care who Georgia Southern plays the rest of the year. That guy's all-conference. He is really impressive. He had 26 that game with 5 threes. Just seemed that they couldn't miss. And they got a 6'8 guy named Caio Gonzalez. D2 grad transfer out of Southeastern Oklahoma State. He made four threes. Somebody, you're not going to block his shot. You just need to try to fluster him and change the path of his eyes and hope make him see that he's not seeing what he needs to. And once Georgia Southern fell behind, they had cut it to five in the first half with about 3.5 minutes left when Richie Riley called his second timeout in less than 2 minutes. And he's known for doing that, but it worked because they scored the last 13 points the first half, and it didn't get any better for Georgia Southern.
Two Eagles in double figures. You had Elijah McCadden with 14, Zach Bryant with 12 points, and then moved on to Saturday with a 62-49 victory over the Jaguars. Three Eagles finished in double figures with Scooty with 12. Elijah McCadden had a double-double, 12 points, 10 rebounds, and Eric Boone with 11 points.
This was the effect of South Alabama finally getting fatigued about midway through the second half, and Georgia Southern just playing better. I think that they got punched, the bell rung, and they realized that we can't do that again, and we can't do that once a weekend, otherwise 9-9 is the best that we're going to do in conference play this year. And who knows, 10-8 might be good enough to win a division this year, because I think the splits are going to be everywhere. In the East right now, everybody's 1-1, and on the West you had ULM and Little Rock pull off sweeps, so they're a robust 2-0 going into the second weekend of conference play. The splits are going to happen a lot with the game so close together. And in this particular instance, look, if South Alabama had one or two more guys available, it could have been a different story because they were still making some shots. And this was a one-possession game until the 15-minute mark of the second half. But then Michael Flowers lost his legs. John Pettway lost his legs. They made just 3 of 21 down the stretch. Georgia Southern didn't exactly light it up, but they made key shots. They made free throws at important times. But the offensive rebounding is what won them the game. They had 15 offensive boards, 21 second chance points, and that's the lowest point total they've held a Sun Belt team to since Arkansas State only scored 49 3 years ago. In that game that Tookie Brown was making crazy three after crazy three, and the more I looked at Matt Stoles, the deeper his head got in his hands. Since that was when we were back courtside. They played well. They played like they needed to win that game because you don't want to be 0-2, and even though there's a lot of splits, you don't want to be 0-2 going to App State. And I think that they were surprised that they split with Troy. I thought that that would be a fairly easy sweep for App, but Troy goes up and wins by 13 in game one, just like Georgia Southern. App gets the message. They come back and win 90-59 less than 24 hours later. So that's what Georgia Southern's going to have to deal with.
Yeah, I think you're going to have more sweeps than or more splits than not.
It's just so
tough. This season. I mean, you look at the women's basketball side, everybody that played, and you had two matchups that got postponed due to COVID concerns. Georgia State had COVID, and their matchup with Coastal Carolina was postponed. Arkansas State and Louisiana Monroe, one of them had COVID as well, and their matchup got postponed. But everybody that played on the women's side got a split. And so I think you're going to see that more often than not. And like we talked about already, with the games being so close together, some within 24 hours of each other, it's a lot to, and we talk about it a lot with baseball, when you play a doubleheader, it's really tough to sweep a doubleheader, but I think kind of the same applies to basketball when you're playing back-to-back days.
It's just not set up that way.
Yeah.
You can only get so much of an edge on a certain team, and you can only have so much energy. Look, John Pettway and Michael Flowers for South played 77 out of 80 minutes in less than 24 hours. They both had to play all 40 minutes. In game two, part of it was because KK Curry picked up his fourth foul less than 2 minutes into the second half. So they were playing with the same five guys for more than 10 minutes.
Holy
they
cow.
Did not sub for more than 10 minutes. And I'm used to seeing that with Keith Richard and ULM by the time we play the Warhawks because they go six, maybe seven deep. But they're in the West. You're not going to see them until the tournament. You won't see a Western team until if you're a 3-6. If you're an East team, you see the West. In your first matchup, if you're a West team, you see an East team because 1 and 2 get those byes like they were doing with the tournament during the Southern Conference days. So are we going to have a great feel for the league by the time we get to the tournament? Maybe, probably not. You're going to have a good feel for your division. You're going to be sick of playing these teams in your division four times with some of these. It's what you have to do. It's just the year, and hopefully it's the only year.
And you and I have talked about it kind of leading into conference play that it almost sets up well for both Georgia Southern men's and women's team because they're one of the few that go more than 6, 7, 8 deep. I mean, Georgia Southern women's basketball would play all 15 in most games. Georgia Southern men's basketball starting to shrink the rotation a little bit, but you're still looking at more than six, seven, eight guys.
They played 11 guys in game two on Saturday, but only five of them played at least 25 minutes. But that's really all you need. You just need guys to come in for a here and there, not to be something they're not, but two guys played 10 minutes off the bench, and then four other guys were 6 minutes or less. It's not that they're trying to steal a whole lot of minutes, but you do need to steal minutes when you're playing for the second time in 2 days against the same team, not just for the second time in three with travel mixed in or having that day to let that game go and prepare for whoever the next opponent is. Yeah, you're going to get a little bit shorter, but at the same time, if you can play 11 and structure it the way that Georgia Southern did, I think Brian Berg and staff played it pretty well. Now, they don't want to lose by 29 and then win the second game every Sun Belt weekend, but at least with this one, they figured out how to split, and now the task moves to Boone, North Carolina.
It'll be somewhere in the ballpark of 3,333 feet in the air. Mm-hmm. Barry McKnight got to experience it last week. Daniel will make his way up the mountain for a 6 o'clock tip-off on Friday, 4 o'clock the tip-off on Saturday for Georgia Southern men's basketball against the Appalachian State Mountaineers. We'll continue with more on this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation as we take a look at those matchups between the Mountaineers and Georgia Southern. But first, we pause for some Eagle Tales with Roger Inman.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, we've got on the theme of road trips the last few weeks and months. Georgia Southern's been to Delaware a couple of times. What can you recollect about your experiences going to Delaware?
Was that place called the Delaware Blue Hens? That's a heck of a road trip. But get my dates right. Yeah, Greg Colson was with the equipment room at that time, and he and I drove to Delaware. Team flew. I got stuck going to Delaware. Went through Washington D.C. And bad news this time frame, it just happened to be shortly after Oklahoma City bombing. And when you ride through Washington, D.C. in a 26-foot yellow Ryder truck, you have to be cautious of where you put it. Some of them police up there was not real kosher to see something like that. And we rode actually down Pennsylvania Avenue in front of the White House prior to them putting all them big old bollards out there so you can't get through it, like we have today. But we were one of the last groups, particularly in a yellow Ryder truck, that probably drove in front of the White House before they closed everything. And then Greg started driving up toward the Capitol. He got too close to the Capitol he should have, and I had to redirect his aiming to go out New York Avenue so we could go on to Delaware. But good news, we didn't get locked up in Washington. We made it through safely.
I can only imagine a documentary coming out about some of Roger's trips, and I think the opening scene should be just a shot of the White House, and then you just see a yellow Ryder truck with Roger driving and passing in front.
The funny thing, him mentioning Washington, D.C. like that, a couple of years ago, this would have been 2017, when Georgia Southern played at George Mason. The day before we left to go to Los Angeles, because we played Bakersfield 3 days later, that morning the team toured Washington, D.C., and we had a chance to get a team fixture in front of the White House. And like he described it, look, we were probably one of the last trucks to go through, just drive up through hoity hoity ho and drive D.C. and let everything hang out, whatever. But when we walked through there, everything was barricaded off, and the fact that we were able to get as close as we were, because, I mean, there were people walking by. I was all pedestrian traffic, but that was interesting, because I didn't think we'd be able to get that close. I thought that there'd be people with glasses and guns and say, oh, no, just keep on going, just look, and then whatever. But that was cool that day.
Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball will look ahead to conference weekend number two. It's the Appalachian State Mountaineers coming into Hanner Fieldhouse for Georgia Southern women's basketball, heading to Boone for men's basketball. But on the women's basketball side, it'll be a 6 o'clock tip-off on Friday, 4 o'clock the tip-off on Saturday. And this is an Appalachian State team coming in 4-4, 1-1 after splitting the weekend with Troy, as we mentioned, winning on Friday 78-66 and losing by 20 on Saturday. And it's an Appalachian State team that is still trying to find itself. A little bit of senior leadership. You've got Laney Gosnell, now a senior out of Demarest, Maya Calder at the point guard. And Pree Stanley is really what makes this team go. The senior out of Rockledge, Florida, 18 points a game. And if she's not scoring, Appalachian State is not winning. And being able to shut her down is going to be a big key for this Georgia Southern team. She's shooting 46% from behind the arc. For a team that's not shooting the ball very well, just 35% from the floor, that's last in the Sun Belt. And they're last in a lot of the categories around stats-wise. But for Georgia Southern, 5-4, 1-1 in conference after splitting with South Alabama this past weekend. But the biggest thing for Georgia Southern, while the defense hasn't been where head coach Anita Howard wants it, the Eagles are top 25 nationally in both forcing turnovers, forcing more than 22 per game, and more than 12 steals per game. And the defense has really been the big thing for this Georgia Southern women's basketball team. But the lockdown defense, especially on the perimeter, has been a little bit of a rough spot for Georgia Southern. And I know that is something that they've been working on the last couple of weeks and the last couple of days, especially because Coach Howard was not thrilled with the way that the perimeter worked. And so I know going in, especially against pre-Stanley, it's going to be something that is going to be heavy focus this week in practice. And we talked about it this week on our first edition of Inside Georgia Southern Basketball, the coach's show coming back over at Bishop Fieldhouse last night.
Whether you are at home or you are on the road, defense has to travel.
Yes.
Because you can score all you want to, but eventually you're going to have a night where you're not hitting, where whatever you do, it's not going in the basket. If you can play defense, though, if you can consistently commit to getting stops, whether you're a man team or a zone team, you're going to figure out a way to win ugly. You're going to figure out a way to win 61-54 or 59-52. Sometimes it's going to be like that. And I would anticipate that at least one of Georgia Southern's men's games this weekend up in Boone are going to be that way. But for the women, getting a victory at South Alabama is a big deal. That's a program that's taken a lot of strides under Terry Fowler the last few years. I can remember when I first got here in 15, they were bottom half of the league. I didn't know if Fowler was going to make it.
Yeah.
But now they've got the player of the year. They get Savannah Jones back. I think that's a team that is going to be very tough down the stretch. But getting one there, knowing that you split there, yeah, when they come to you, it could be that much easier. But you come in against an Appalachian State team that seems like it has more questions than answers at this point.
We talk about a lot of the coaches around the league that are really good people. We've talked about Blake Anderson, who is now taking his talents to Utah State. But we've talked about a lot of people on the basketball side. Keith Richard is somebody that we always talk about being big fans of around the league. But this week and the past week are two that on the women's basketball side, those are really good coaches. Terry Fowler in his eighth year at South Alabama. Angel Elderkin in her seventh year was pretty public the last couple of years with her battle with cancer, and everything looks to be A-OK on that front. And she is somebody that it's one of those that when you get to talk to her, you feel like you're talking to somebody kind of special. And I don't know any better way to put that, but I think you kind of get the idea of what I'm getting at.
You could see the amount of respect that she was garnering from not just the league, but her colleagues. I can remember it was a couple of years ago when Little Rock head coach Joe Foley, who could be the coach of the year every year in this league, he's the standard. He is just phenomenal. Yeah. He won his coach of the year award and gave it to Coach Elderkin.
Yeah.
That's about as classy as you're going to get.
Yeah. So Angel Elderkin in her seventh year leading the Appalachian State team will bring her 4-4 Mountaineers. It'll be a 6 o'clock tip-off on Friday, 4 o'clock the tip-off on Saturday. Same times for the men up in Boone, 6 o'clock on Friday, 4 o'clock on Saturday. What do you know about this Appalachian State men's basketball team?
Just like South Alabama came in last weekend 6-3 when Georgia Southern was 6-3. Now the Eagles are 7-4, 1-1. App State is 7-4 and 1-1. And like we were talking about with football, you can't really look at schedules because teams are just needing to get games. They beat Carver 105-23 earlier this year, similar to what Georgia Southern did in that meeting at Hander Fieldhouse. The matchup, though, that could tell you a little bit about them and how they could navigate 2021, they hosted Bowling Green up in the Holmes Convocation Center. It's the only Division I opponent in the non-conference. They had a chance to bring to the high country. Lost that game in overtime, but that was a Bowling Green team that won 21 games last year. A very good MAC team. Michael Almodesi for Appalachian State, one of their transfers from Southern New Hampshire. You hear all the commercials about it, but they actually do have a basketball team up there, apparently.
Wow.
He's done quite well so far. He made a four-point play in the final minute to force overtime. So he has done a nice job ingratiating himself to the people up in Boone. It's a different team, though. And even though Justin Forrest is back, he's very different. I'm going to go to the guys that they've lost first. Isaac Johnson, O'Shawn Williams, and Hunter Seacat are all gone, and those are three pretty important players. Johnson was one of the best post players over the course of his 4 years. He was second in the league in rebounding last season.
Oh, the man bun's gone?
The second man bun is gone. Griffin Kenny first. He was a few years before. Now, Seacat, the former William & Mary transfer, he gone too.
That's a shame.
So with them being gone, especially with O'Shawn Williams, he really thrived in year one under Dustin Kearns. He went from 4 points a game to 13 points per game. Justin Forrest was expected to do a lot this year. He is a preseason first-teamer. He was a first-teamer last year. He scored 17 a game, which was third best in the league. He did get derailed a little bit by an injury. He missed three games during the non-conference. He's only scoring 7 points a game, which when I looked at it was really odd to me for somebody that's scoring better than 16 a game in his career. He has nearly 1,600 career points. He has a chance to finish with 2,000. He's already top 10 in school history. But Forrest just came off of his best game in that second against Troy. He had 21 on 6 of 7 from 3. He only scored 37 points all year before that game for somebody that is known as one of the top scorers, but also volume shooters in this league. Now, he had been running point guard a lot of last season and at the start of this season, but a wrinkle thrown in with DeShawn Parker being eligible. Now, why is that a wrinkle? Well, not only is he a transfer from James Madison, left after Lewis Rowe was fired, Mark Byington from Georgia Southern was hired, but his waiver was just approved a few weeks ago. He had to miss the first six games of the season, but now he's played the last five. He has started the last three. They move Forrest off the ball to the two, let Parker run the offense. He hasn't found his shot yet, but simply him being on the floor has helped them immensely. Adrian Delph is a really good player, 6'3 junior out of Gastonia, North Carolina, and Kings Mountain High School. He went from a guy that was really streaky as a freshman to even streakier as a sophomore, but now he's finally consistent. He's scoring 12 a game, easily his best shooting season of his career, 42% from distance, is just outside of the league's top 10. Guy that didn't play that is very important to them is Kendall Lewis, 6'7 sophomore from Snellville, went to Shiloh High. One of the best defenders in the league, especially on the perimeter. He missed both games last weekend against Troy due to personal reasons. Now, they didn't specifically say if he was hurt or if it was COVID-related. All they announced was personal reasons. So if he's out, that takes a big part of their man defense away. If he's in, that makes them that much better.
Be a 6 o'clock tip-off on Friday, 4 o'clock the tip-off on Saturday. We will have the airtime for both Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball 30 minutes prior with the countdown to tip-off. Again, women's basketball inside Hanner Fieldhouse, men's basketball up in the Holmes Convocation Center. Before we go, got to ask you a question.
Okay.
Did you get your picture made with the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl trophy?
I have a picture of it, but I don't have a picture with it.
Oh. We need to get one of our crew with it. I don't know when everybody will be together again, but
next September before Gardner Webb.
Yeah, I was about to say
maybe.
September 4th, maybe. I don't know.
What worked out so well about the Camellia Bowl was that it was still early enough that we weren't crowded with Christmas and the New Year, that we could have a gathering. What's a gathering, since you can't do that now? But we had a gathering where the trophy was there, everybody could get their picture. And I would imagine if you want to go to the FOC, if you wear your mask and get temperature checked and sanitize and all that, they'll let you do it. But the opportunity to have the trophy at Hanner over the weekend was neat, in the case that you don't have a chance to get over to the FOC. But yeah, we didn't get a full group picture with the GoDaddy Bowl. We didn't get one with Camellia. I mean, we could.
Yeah, I mean, we could. What we'll do is when they put it in the actual case, then we'll go over there and get one with all three all at once.
The way that they've got the FOC built, they're going to have to figure a way to start fitting all these extra trophies, because they're almost out of room on that wall.
You just kind of curve it a little bit and start going by the windows. Then you start blocking the door, though. Never mind. Forget that.
Hey, you're...
Yeah. Somebody that's a lot smarter than us will figure that out.
Because we're taping this at Bishop, and I'm looking right across and trying to see where the curve would take place. I can actually No, I can't see it. We're too far away to see it. But one goalpost is on the far side. They've taken out the goalpost right next to us, though.
Well, they had to take out the near side goalpost because of graduation.
Right.
Because that would be where the stage was.
Yeah.
So they'll get the goalposts up. They'll be straight and beautiful, and it'll be glorious.
Gardner Webb, September 4th, 2021.
We've got a lot to cover before we get to that.
Yeah, we'll get there. We got a baseball season, too.
Yes, we do. And, boy, is that going to be a lot of fun. But Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball against the Appalachian State Mountaineers, we will bring it all to you right here on the Georgia Southern Sports Network. For the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.